Thanks for joining us. I'm Susan Page of USA Today, sitting in for Diane Rehm. Diane is in New York receiving the International Women's Media Lifetime Achievement Award. Well, speaking of women, maybe you've watched Comedy Central's hit show Broad City. The character Abby Abrams is an artist. Well, a struggling artist who works as a janitor at a fancy gym. Abby is played by real-life Abby Jacobson, the shared name, a nod to some of their shared qualities. That includes being an artist, and that's on display in her new book. It's called Carry This Book. She illustrates what she imagines famous people and fictional characters from Sigmund Freud to Homer Simpson might carry in their bags. Abby Jacobson joins us from New York. Welcome to the Diane Rehm Show.
Thanks so much for having me. What a pleasure.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you here. Now, some people who know you as for your TV character role may not know that your Abby Abrams is an aspiring artist, but so is Abby Jacobson. How important is your artwork to you? How important has that been?
It's definitely come back into my life in a big way with this book, but I actually went to art school for undergrad. I didn't go to grad school, but I only went to undergrad. I went to art school in Baltimore, Maryland Institute College of Art. So that was sort of my first passion. Growing up, I always was drawing and then ended up studying fine art. And so that's always been something that was pretty important to me. And I sort of gave those details of my life to my character on the show. That was sort of like my struggles in my early 20s is sort of what she's going through.
Well, and in fact, maybe we should run a clip we've got prepared from the show that deals with Abby, your character, and her artwork. Here, let's listen to it.
That's hysterical. $40, huh?
Yeah, which is a really great deal considering the art we'll only continue to appreciate.
Of course shrimp cocktails, Ron Howard's favorite food. He probably has it 3 or 4 times a week, that
It's a fictional series based on the artist's imagination.
Wait a minute, you mean this is not real? Like Bruce Springsteen's favorite food's not a tomato?
No, I mean, he's from Jersey, so I put him with the tomato because I was like, that's a marriage, you know, that works.
Oh, come on, this is unbelievable.
So in that clip, you are pairing food with celebrities. Now, did you sell that guy the painting?
No, I did not. But I tried to for a while. So that series, actually, I was doing these little series that I would just post online. And one of the first ones I did was called Famous Favorites. That was sort of, you know, can be traced back to like sort of where the beginning of this book came from. And I did it probably in 2012 while we were writing the pilot for the show. And then I gave it to my character.
So the book you've written, Carry This Book, it has not much text. It has pictures, collections of what you think a famous person just might be carrying. Why is it important or interesting or fun to look at what people carry around with them?
It's something that's just always sort of been fascinating to me. What people, I think it's just a voyeuristic look into someone's private life, seeing what they might have in their bag or what they carry around or what's in their glove compartment. It's a way to peek into who they are. It's sort of like little clues that are examples of where they go, what their favorite things are. It's endless possibilities. It was originally inspired by, bizarrely, I had this required reading when I was in eighth grade, which was this book, The Things They Carried by Tim O'Brien. And what stuck with me up until I pitched this book was this idea in that book, he told the audience about the characters, which were Vietnam vets. He told you about them by showing what they had in their bags. And that was just such an interesting way to tell a story to me. And it just stuck out. So when I pitched this book, I thought, wow, we live in such a like celebrity-driven culture. Pop culture is so prominent right now with social media and all this stuff. And I found it would be such a way, such an interesting way for me to get to explore real stuff about these people, historical and sort of just more famous people and characters, by drawing them. And it was my own sort of fan fiction.
So you have some people you might express, like Oprah Winfrey. You also have some people I didn't expect, like Albert Einstein, what Albert Einstein right. cares on. You have a pair of socks that he's carrying around. Why has Albert Einstein got a pair of socks in his bag?
Yeah, so during the research of this book, you know, I did some pretty basic research, but found a lot of these really interesting facts about people that I didn't know and that most people don't know. So in Albert Einstein's bag, there's a pair of socks. And apparently, he really didn't like wearing socks. And so I put it in his bag. And I think I have a little call out that says, just in case people give him shit for it. Yeah, it was just so interesting to find out all this stuff. And then I got to obviously use my imagination to expand upon any of those.
Well, some
real
of them
things.
Are pretty sly. Talk about what Hillary, you have Hillary Clinton carrying around. Like a, you have yeah. a Metro card.
Right, because she had some trouble with at the turnstile. I mean, I didn't go too hard with like jabbing anyone too hard, but I thought she would carry a Metro card. And I think I call out. For practice. Practice makes perfect. You got to get the hang of that swiping. You know, I do it every day. You got to get the hang of it. She has a bottle of hot sauce because she loves hot sauce. She's got a Lady Gaga fan club card because during this research about her, I found out she was a fan of Lady Gaga. What else? Oh, she has her BlackBerry because there's that famous photo of her holding the BlackBerry. And I made sort of a ridiculous game on the face of it because I was like, well, what was she doing when on the other side of that BlackBerry? Who knows?
What was she doing?
Well, I don't know.
Well, you know, interestingly, she appeared on your show. Hillary Clinton did.
She did.
How did that work out? Because I've been trying to get an interview with her, and it's been really hard.
Well, it was pretty hard to get her on the show. We write the episodes way before we shoot them and way before they air, about a year before. And we had this idea that Alana's character would sort of stumble upon this quote-unquote job at Hillary's campaign office. And that would just be a way for us to get to comment on what we would expect people would call into the campaign office asking questions about Hillary, sort of ridiculous things. And then we sort of wrote this other part that was like, well, what if we could get Hillary? We have it written where we don't need her to be in it, but Alana is working in her campaign. And then we have an option where if she were to say yes, which would be completely crazy, we have this scene with her. And so we kind of simultaneously planned for either. And we reached out to her campaign office. We had a bunch of different connections through Comedy Central and people we knew. And it was unbelievable that she said yes.
Well, let's listen. We have the clip of Hillary Clinton when she appeared on Broad City. Let's listen.
Oh, I'm sorry. We are just so excited.
It's all right. Just take your time.
One more.
Thank you, Ilana. Thank you for all of your help.
You know of me?
Well, you're wearing a name tag.
Oh, Jesus. Yes. Abby. Hello. Proud Democrat. College. Aquarius. I pegged Secretary Clinton.
Madam. President. She came. I can't afford to volunteer her full time, but I still want to get the word out. So I vow to tweet once a week, vote for Hillary. Yes, yes, yes.
That would be great. We need to drum up some excitement for the campaign, do everything that we possibly can.
That was Hillary Clinton on Broad City. And did you think she is actually someone who watches your show?
I don't think she did before. I hope she does now.
Why do you think she agreed to do your show?
I mean, I think it was... We definitely have a really I think our audience for the show is such a – we've even – because we started as a web series and we've always had this like quality. It was never this huge audience as a web series. And it's not even a huge audience as a TV show, but I feel like it's a really quality fan base. And I think it was really beneficial to both of our parties, the Broad City camp and the Hillary camp, mutually beneficial for her to do the show. It was amazing for us, and I think it was really great for her campaign.
We have a question on Facebook. This question is, some friends of mine have accused Broad City of being a girl show, but honestly, it's just a hilarious show about friendship. Do you think it's a girl show?
No, I don't. It's weird that they have accused it. That's such a harsh way of, like, right?
Like, what a terrible thing to be a girl show.
I know. It's like, well, it's fine if people watch it because of that. But I think it's just a show about two best friends, you know, trying to figure out their next step and just, like, enjoying each other's company. And it's so funny. People feel like nowadays you have to just... You have to label. Everything has to be in a category. So it's fine if people want to call it that. It's fine if they don't.
Yeah. Well, we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Abby Jacobson of Broad City and talking about her new book. It's called Carry This Book. Stay with us. Welcome back. I'm Susan Page of USA Today, sitting in for Diane Rehm. And we're talking now with Abby Jacobson of Broad City, the Comedy Central show. She's got a new book out. It's called Carry This Book. Before the break, you were talking about your co-star, your good friend, Alana Glazer, who plays Alana Wexler on the show. Your best friends on the show. Are you best friends off the show?
Yeah, we are. I've known Alana. I've been in New York for a little over 10 years, and I've known Alana for probably 9. We came up doing improv together. We were on an improv team for a long time. It's where we met, and then we started making Broad City the web series in 2009. And, yeah, we have managed to create a really amazing working partnership while at the same time we're constantly sort of I'm very lucky. I have so much fun at my job.
Well, talk about how you got a web series started. How big a production was it to get started with a web series?
It was extremely small. Basically, at first, Alana and I couldn't really pay anybody to help us. So we both come out of the Upright Citizens Brigade improv theater in New York. So we were both taking classes there. We never got on these house teams, but we were performing in and around that theater and in other little theaters around New York. And the comedy community is really wonderful. So we met all these other people, and we sort of started helping each other and being in each other's things. And once Alana and I hooked up and started this web series, we couldn't pay anyone in anything other than food for the first season of our web show. And then we paid all the directors $100. But we have 34 web episodes that are on YouTube. So it was like, it was really just like us, any of our friends that we had as other actors, if we had anyone else in the episode, and someone holding the camera. You know, it's pretty basic. All the locations were our actual apartments, or a pizza shop that we paid $50 and they would let us shoot in there. I wish that we could pay pizza shops $50 now to shoot in, but that is no longer the case. It was really small. It was really run and gun.
Well, you know, we've gotten two questions on Facebook that go kind of to this point. One is, how often do they go off script and improv? Their exchanges are so quick-witted and perfectly timed. And another questioner says, how difficult is it to translate your improv skills and experiences into a scripted television show? Because I assume when it was a web show, you didn't have like elaborate scripts, right? Was it kind of improvised?
It's definitely more scripted now. But when it was a web show, we still wrote scripts because Alana and I were sort of like working, like that was our first opportunity to write scripts. So we were very into like writing actual scripts. And so we did that, but we did improvise, I think, a little bit more because it was way more like fly by the seat of our pants for the web series. And on the television show, it's very, very scripted. So we spend 3 months writing And the writing, is, I think, is the hardest part. We have a small group of other writers that work with us, and we write and rewrite and rewrite. And then when we get to actual production, when we're shooting, we usually do two or three versions of the written scripts, and then we sort of get a little looser and improvise. And Alana and me especially, our dialogue is based so on how we communicate, so we're pretty good at making it very natural because we're writing it. And then when we improvise, it is sort of hard to tell which is which at the end.
You know, it is true that one of the things that I think people like about your show is that it seems improvised. It seems authentic. It seems like you're really talking to your friend. And it's also gotten praised for being more realistic than many shows about women, how women talk to each other. Do you feel this is something different, something that we haven't seen until recently when it comes to TV shows?
I mean, I think it's definitely something that's becoming more prominent in television and film. Is just like more people are, I feel like honesty and this like raw exposure of the way people talk to each other in general is sort of like more prominent in shows and stuff. I think because we've found, at least for us, when we write about like something that's actually happened to us and the way we felt and the way we talked about it when it happened, when we write about that, that's what we find the most fun. So like a lot of the stuff on the show, conversations that we actually had and we're actually laughing about. So then when we put it on the show, we're fairly confident that it's going to work because it was hilarious when we actually felt that way. But I just think people are trying to be more honest about kind of the parts of life that are not always so public.
Are not always so perfect, too. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
You know, here's an email from Patsy. She writes, I enjoy Broad City and admire the creativity and humor. Besides yourselves, are the other characters based on people you know?
Sometimes, yeah. I think that Lincoln, who's played by Hannibal Buress, who's amazing, Lincoln is not based on one person, but is sort of a collection of people. And then Jaime, Alana's roommate on the show, played by Arturo Castro, is based on one of my best friends from college, Jaime, and one of Alana's best friends from college, Inti. And Inti and her best friend, Matt. And it's sort of like a mix of those three guys. So like everyone is sort of pulled from somebody.
Here's an email we've gotten. What's the deal with Bed Bath & Beyond? Do you guys like own stock in it? Because you talk a lot about Bed Bath & Beyond.
You know, I feel like they should have given us some stock at this point. The Bed Bath & Beyond thing sort of started. My mom worked at Bed Bath & Beyond when I was growing up. And I just remember her coworkers were, whenever I went in to visit her, they were so friendly and they felt like, you know, there was a real camaraderie there. And there's a scene in the show, you know, my mom would, in real life, my mom would send me coupons. And I kept them in an envelope because I often couldn't afford to just go. I would go at one time and like use a lot of coupons. And my roommate at the time, I guess when I was not home, went through the envelope and looked at all the expiration dates and he threw them all away. And I had this happen. There's a scene in the show where this happens, where Bevers, my roommate's boyfriend that quote unquote lives with me, throws away all these Bed Bath & Beyond coupons because he sees they're all expired, but they don't expire, which it really happened. My mom told me they never expire, which they may or may not be changing now because people keep tweeting at me that Bed Bath & Beyond is changing this policy. But that situation actually happened to me. I personally don't have like this as big of a love for Bed Bath & Beyond as my character. But I don't know, the more we started writing about it, the more we thought that's such a specific place and type of person that loves a store like that. And then they let us shoot in there, which was amazing. and the two actors that play the people that work at Bed Bath & Beyond were just, it was so much fun.
Who could not love Bed Bath & Beyond, really? So here's a question. This show, your season 4 of Broad City is going to be released in 2017. Could this go on for a while? Could you guys like grow up together, get older? Decades from now, you'll have Broad City and you'll be like an episode of the Golden Girls. I mean, what do you see? How long could it last?
Yeah, you know, it's been something that Alana and I have been talking about because I think our main priority is to make, you know, every episode is very precious to us. They're all very jam-packed with jokes, and we're not very still for very long. And we try to make them all very unique and special. And so we never want to get to the point where we're making episodes that don't feel that way. So that's been an ongoing conversation about like, well, when, you know, I guess when we feel that way, that's when we would ultimately stop. We're not there yet, obviously, but I think that's the thing. I think the quality control is something that we are very aware of.
Abby Jacobs, and you've written this book, Carrie, this book. So let me ask you a last question. If somebody unpacked your bag right now, what would they find in it? What do you carry?
Well, right now I'm doing all this press, so I feel a little bit out of sorts. I always have a book and a notebook because in New York you often end up you're on the train for like an hour, or, you know, I always have to have things. I always have a pen. If I forget a pen, I have to go buy one. Mm-hmm. And I'm a big pen person, as you can see from my book. My phone, headphones, obviously. I always have a lip gloss, a lipstick. I guess I would always have a tampon in case. what else? Wallet, obviously. MetroCard. Purell I usually have with me in case I got to hold on the subway. Yeah, I don't have anything really that great for this question. Pretty functional stuff.
Abby Jacobson, thanks so much for joining us on the Diane Rehm Show.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Abby Jacobson, she's the author of this new book. It's called Carrie, This Book. She's also the co-executive producer, co-creator, and co-star of Broad City, a show on Comedy Central. We've been so glad to talk to her. But now we're joined by a panel of experts and critics about TV who can talk about Broad City and some other shows coming up in the fall season. I'm joined in the studio by Jen Chaney, TV columnist with Vulture. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Joining us from Oakland, California is Ingu Kang, chief TV critic for MTV News. Welcome.
Hello.
And from Tampa, Eric Diggins, TV critic for NPR. Eric, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Well, Jen, let's start with you. What strikes you about Broad City? Why has it been a success? What does it reflect in terms of what TV is doing these days?
Well, you had asked Abby earlier about whether it's a girl's show, and I think it's correct that it's just a great show and a very funny show, period. But I do think it's representative, as you were discussing earlier, of a lot of shows that are not only featuring women in starring roles, but really where the women are creating the shows and they're driving the narratives. You know, Broad City has been a part of that. Girls has been a part of that. And then just even looking at this fall TV season, you have shows like Fleabag, Phoebe Waller-Bridge's show, which was a British show that's now on Amazon. You have Insecure, which is Issa Rae's show on HBO, which started like Broad City as a web series and is now on HBO, half-hour comedy. You have Better Things on FX, which is Pamela Adlon's show. She's the star, but she, along with Louis C.K., are really driving what those stories are about every week. So I think it's really at the vanguard of seeing more and more female voices as the auteurs of these shows, in addition to being the stars of them.
Well, Ingu, it's really amazing that we now have several shows that started out as web series where, as we heard Abby Jacobson describe it, it was just her and some friends paying each other with food. And now it's a show on Comedy Central. So there's this path to become a show on a big outlet like Comedy Central or HBO through doing that.
I mean, one would hope, right? I think that's the thing that they're all sort of aspiring for, all of these amazing people on the web. I think it sort of gives rise to the hope that if you're good enough, if you have an important enough voice, you can make it to the big leagues. I think it's probably still a bit of a, you know, like playing the lottery. But on the other hand, I'm so glad that we have these voices and that they were able to sort of hone their voices and hone their filmmaking skills, essentially, through all of the web series work that they had put into it and into sculpting their persona.
I'm Susan Page, and you're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. We're going to take your calls, 1-800-433-8850. Well, Eric, let me go to you. Do you like the show, Broad City?
Yeah, I do like the show, and I do think it's emblematic of a trend that we're seeing where we've gone from shows like Sex and the City that seem to capture women's voices, but they were created by men or run by men, to shows where women of color, people of color, are getting the kind of creative agency to really create authentic expressions of how their world works, how people who look like them and think like them talk and relate to each other. You think about shows like Insecure on HBO, you know, shows like Queen Sugar on OWN. You're really getting a sense that these are very specific experiences that are created by very talented people who 5 years ago would never have been given the level of resources they've gotten to make the kind of shows that they're making. And I think TV is all the richer for it.
And they're different, Jen, aren't they? They're a little rawer. They take more risks. I think they risk offending some people. Is that a change from what we've seen before in programming?
Well, I think, again, to bring it back to women, I think you're seeing women maybe being a little bit more, and people of color, too, as Eric was saying, upfront about their specific perspectives. And as Abby Jacobson was saying earlier, being more honest. I mean, the entire, to use Broad City as an example, their last season finale, like most of the episode was about Abby trying to find a tampon on an airplane and being mistaken for being a terrorist because of that, which is just a funny premise. But the subtext of that is really a feminist thing going on there. So I think people are being more forthright and speaking their own languages and being given the room and permission to do that.
Ingu, what do you see happening when it comes to being able to be maybe a little more outrageous than TV could be before?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with a topic that I think Jen was touching on also, which is the issue of female likability. And I think this sort of image that we've had of women as wives and as daughters and as docile girlfriends, we've had that image for so long on TV. And so that really restricted the breadth of female experience that we were able to see on TV. And I think that outrageousness is part of what is so exciting about all of these altruist visions that we have on TV right now. In the same episode that John was just talking about, you know, a big part of that airport episode involved something called period pants, which involved a pair of jeans that had a big red stain on it. And the thing is that you were just supposed to go along with it and laugh. And if you belong to a sort of older generation that goes, ew, menstruation, then you're not really a part of this beautiful, goofy vision anymore.
Yeah. Ingu Kong. That's Ingu Kong. She's chief TV critic with MTV News. And we're also joined by Eric Diggins, TV critic for NPR, and Jen Chaney, TV columnist for Vulture. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about some other shows that are coming up. What do they recommend? What is their must-see show this fall? Stay with us. Welcome back. I'm Susan Page of USA Today, sitting in for Diane Rehm. We're talking about the new TV season and some of the interesting and different kinds of shows that are available on different kind of platforms. Joining us from Tampa is Eric Diggins, TV critic for NPR. From Oakland, California, Ingu Kang, chief TV critic for MTV News. And with me here in the studio, Jen Chaney, TV columnist for Vulture. You know, several of you before the break mentioned a show called Insecure. We have a clip from Insecure. Let's listen to it.
As youth liaison, I can assure you that whatever it is you need to succeed, we got y'all. So do y'all have any questions? Don't be shy, guys. Fire away.
Why you talk like a white girl?
You caught me. I'm rocking blackface. Any other questions?
What's up with your hair?
I don't know what you mean.
My cousin can put some tracks in it. Unless you like it like that.
You rule. She African.
We're all from Africa, guys.
Absolutely. Let's stick to questions about the program.
Is this what you always wanted to do?
No. But I got this job after college, and it fit my interests at the time.
Are you single?
I don't think that's appropriate.
Ingu, this is from the season premiere of Insecure. Tell us what's going on with this scene.
So Issa Rae is a worker at an educational nonprofit, and so she's trying to set up really helpful after-school programs for these high school kids in a disadvantaged neighborhood in Los Angeles. And basically, she's trying to get a read of the room, seeing what they need, and all, of course, all the kids want to do is make fun of her. And so, you know, they make fun of her hair, they make fun of her... They make fun of the way that she talks, et cetera.
And so this I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
And so this is a show on HBO, right?
It is a show on HBO, and it's one of the very few Black-driven shows on HBO, which is really refreshing.
Yeah. Well, so you like this show. What do you like about it?
Oh, what don't I love about this show? I think one of the things that just really speak to me as a viewer is that it's a show about female friendships that I don't really see very much. It's interesting that the first half of this hour was about Broad City, which is another show about female friendship, because they're actually quite rare. And the thing that I love about the relationship between the character of Issa and the character of Molly is that so much of their friendship is sort of culturally dependent in a sense, and that they are both people who grew up in a not so great neighborhood in Los Angeles and have sort of quote unquote made it into a wider world, meaning WHITER. And they're sort of still toggling back and forth between their, I guess, like quote unquote blacker selves and also their professional lives. And the fact that they are able to, the fact that so much of their friendship is actually about that sort of cultural clash that they feel within one city, that really spoke to me because it's something I could relate to as a person who also grew up in Los Angeles.
So we talked about when we were talking to Abby Jacobson earlier in this hour, we got an email saying her show is often accused of being a show for girls. Here's an email from Dylan who says, "We were big fans of 30 Rock when it was on. How much of an influence did Tina Fey and company have in ushering in the female voice into the mainstream media? Was that a kind of breakthrough, Jen, do you think?"
I think that it was. And I think it was a breakthrough not only because Tina Fey is female, but also just in terms of that type of comedy. That show, and I also think Arrested Development, which were very, very super fast. You had to really keep up a lot of... quick pop culture reference type of jokes. You almost had to watch an episode twice to completely absorb all of the humor in it. And I think a lot of the really great comedies, although now a lot of them are skewing more toward drama in a lot of ways, but a lot of comedies since, and certainly Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, which is another Tina Fey show, they have that rapid fire, you really have to pay close attention approach.
Eric, I know that you mentioned that you like a show called Atlanta, which is on FX, I think. What do you like about it? Tell us a little about it.
Sure. Well, okay, so this is a show that was developed by Donald Glover, who folks may remember from the NBC sitcom Community. And it's about these three guys in Atlanta, and they're all African-American. One of them is an up-and-coming rapper. Donald Glover plays a guy who wants to be his manager. And then they have a third guy who's kind of this dysfunctional friend. And they're all having these adventures in Atlanta where essentially they're trying to get out of their humdrum lives and build something for themselves in the music industry. And what it really is, though, is this this comedy about young black men at this point in time, and they're just being themselves. And that's the great thing also about Insecure on HBO. You know, I interviewed Issa Rae in Los Angeles a few months ago, and she talked about how just creating a show about what she called basic black women is a revolutionary act in television, because often when we see shows centered around black characters, you know, there's some sort of oppressive and huge thing attached to their race, you know, particularly if we're talking about like these slavery dramas like Underground and things like that. They're great shows, but we don't get to see many shows where black people are just being people and living that life where you do sometimes race is a part of your life, sometimes it isn't. Sometimes it's just about wherever you're living. It's about the social economic circumstances you find yourself in. And Atlanta and Insecure both sort of articulate that very well for black men and black women in different ways. And also Atlanta has this freedom that you also saw in another FX show, Louis, where Louis C.K. had this show where, you know, one moment he would cast one actress as his sister, and then you'd never see that actress again, and he might cast somebody else as his brother. Whatever he wanted to do to sort of tell the story at hand, he would do it. And Donald is doing a bit of that on Atlanta as well, and it's made the show very creative, very interesting, very unpredictable. One more thing I wanted to note, to sort of go back to what we talked about earlier, I think one reason why we've seen these comedies be very explicit is because it's a generational thing, and it's a way to sort of separate these comedies that are aimed at millennials and aimed at younger viewers away from the more traditional comedies that, you know, some of us have grown up with, like maybe Friends or Seinfeld or something like that. One way that You Are the Worst or Broad City or Girls or Insecure or Atlanta can go places that shows before them haven't gone is by being more explicit and really talking about life the way young people live it right now, which is a bit more explicit, I think, than maybe previous generations have lived it.
Well, we heard a clip from Broad City and one from Insecure. Let's listen to a clip from Atlanta, the show that you were just talking about.
You gonna invite me in?
No.
Why not?
I can't afford it.
Come on, you really think I'm here for money?
We do, yes.
I'm looking for Alfred. Also, could you pick up Lottie from Kai's? I'm getting a job and Van's on a date.
You got
really?
A job?
Hey, good for her.
Yes, I got a job. And thanks, Mom. I'm your son, Earn. I used to live in there with you, remember?
So Eric, tell us what's happening in this clip.
So the character that Donald Glover plays, Earn Marks, dropped out of I think Princeton, and is sort of scuffling to try and make his way. He has a daughter with a woman with his girlfriend, and he's often asking his parents to watch his kid or loan him money. And so when he stops by the house to talk to them, they're on guard. They won't even let him in. And then there's a, you know, so, and I think, again, you know, that's something that everybody can kind of relate to, trying to find your way, trying to establish yourself, trying to figure out if college is for you or not, and then trying to survive if you're trying to find a way that's unconventional and different than maybe you know, most people expect it for you. And that's what Earn is facing as the show kind of kicks off.
Yeah. Let's go to the phones. Let some of our listeners join our conversation. Rich is calling us from Cambridge, Maryland. Rich, hi. You're on the air.
Hi. Good morning. I just want to take issue lightly with the suggestion that when you have a show that has a creative and production team who are all women, that the result is a girl show or a women's show. I love Broad City, and I'm a 63-year-old male, and I live out in the sticks on the Eastern Shore. You know, when you have women making a show about women, it enhances the honesty, and honesty enhances humor, and humor is just funny, period.
Rich, that's great to hear. Thank you so much for your call. Let's go to John calling us from Tulsa, Oklahoma. John, hi.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to ask, because, and I really don't have an answer to this, what is the panel's take on the level of violence, physical violence, as portrayed on The Walking Dead Season 7, as it's reflective of what's going on in our culture or as it's you know, what's going on here? We can't even, we're intimidated just to open the doors this Halloween to wondering about killer clowns. And we really have had clown violence here in Oklahoma. So what do you think about this latest rendition of physical violence on TV?
John, before we ask our panel, let me ask you, what do you think about it?
I think it's too much. I can't remember the mob film back in the day. I remember a scene where a guy hit the man in the head with a baseball bat, and I just saw the blood going into the floor as an image of years ago, and it haunted me for so long. And that looks like a nursery rhyme compared to what we've just been exposed to with this episode. So I think it's destructive. I think it's, where do we put the limits? I would put the limits back. I would say let's not look at this. I look at it as like a magic mirror that doesn't reflect, but it kind of leads us deeper into the darkness. And I don't really appreciate that about the level of violence.
John, that's so interesting. Thank you so much for your calling, for giving us your perspective. Who on the panel would like to talk about the level of violence on The Walking Dead and maybe on some other shows? Jen, how about you?
Well, I have to confess that I watched The Walking Dead for several seasons, and then I gave up on it because it wasn't because of the violence so much, but it was because it was the relentlessness of it. There was just no chance that they were ever going to, you know, be saved and that the zombie apocalypse would lift. I couldn't do it anymore. But, you know, after that episode on Sunday night, which everyone has been talking about, I was having an interesting conversation on Twitter, and I was just noticing that there's a divide. A lot of TV critics were saying, as I was saying, you know, I feel like I should start watching the show again because it's my job. But as a human being, I have no desire to do that. But obviously there's 17 million people watched that episode the other night. So I feel like there is a divide between there are some people who are still really committed to that show and a lot of people who aren't. And a lot of the people who aren't happen to be TV critics. So I don't know what that says about America, but probably something.
Hey, Eric, what do you think?
Well, you know, what's interesting to me about it, I'm a fan of both the books and the TV show. There's a graphic novel that the show's based on. And the graphic novel has always been much more brutal and much more explicit than the TV show has been. And the point of The Walking Dead, the graphic novel, is that, you know, typical zombie movies show the zombie apocalypse kind of visiting the Earth, and then someone finds a way to solve it, or someone finds a way to have some resolution, and then the story ends. The Walking Dead starts at that point and says, you have these characters that live in this world now, and how do they survive, and how do they keep their humanity alive? And that is a very sort of brutal, bruising prospect. And the show on television, I think, has turned a corner, and it is fully where the book is now in terms of this is a punishing, unrelenting world. It's very explicitly violent, and every viewer has to decide whether they want to experience that or not. I'm not sure I want some FCC or some, you know, official, you know, body to come down and say, hey, Walking Dead, you can't do this or you can't do that. I think the viewers are going to decide whether or not they want to consume this story, where it's headed now. But for people who enjoy it or are interested in it, I think there's a sense that, you know, the gloves are off, and the show is heading into the full implications of what it means to try to depict this world the way it might exist. If you try to have an unfettered view of what a zombie apocalypse would be like and what it would be like to try and survive in that world. And, you know, you can say that that's cool or not, but that's kind of what they're doing. The other thing I would say, I wanted to speak to the earlier caller. I do feel that by creating TV that's very specific to a culture, you also have a lot of commonality. So when you create a show that's very much about Black culture, people can look at that and see a lot of common experience there. You know, I loved watching, for example, The Godfather or Goodfellas or shows that are kind of rooted in Italian culture in a way, even though I don't know a lot about it, because I could see commonality between my life and theirs, but I also was learning something new about a culture I didn't know that well. And I think that's what's happening with these shows where, you know, women have taken control of them. We're seeing women deal with each other in a way that's very specific and very authentic, but you also see the commonality about how people relate to each other, and that's what makes the show so interesting.
I'm Susan Page, and you're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. You know, we've been talking about shows that are on Netflix and HBO and Comedy Central. How about good old network television? Are there any new shows this season are returning shows that you think are just really excellent and people ought to tune in on, something that has struck you. Ingu, let me start with you. Is there anything you've been really, you really like?
Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
Yay.
Yay. I think that that's a show that has really had to run on all of its creative cylinders from the get-go, and it's just been doing that in impressively wild ways. And I love that that's a show that takes this outlandish premise of a grown woman who moves across the country to sort of be with her boyfriend from, like, her teenage years at camp, and is sort of able to dive into what exactly her mental illness is and how it's been sort of hampering her life in these, like, very sad ways. And then to try to see why people are actually drawn to her as a colleague and as a friend, because it turns out that a lot of the people that she pulls into her life, into her new life in California, are actually also damaged in particular ways, where they can really relate to her in ways that they can't relate to other people.
Mm-hmm. We're almost out of time. Let me give Jen a chance to name a show that you think people ought to be tuning into.
Well, as far as network shows that are brand new this fall, The Good Place on NBC, I think it's a very clever show. The premise is that Kristen Bell plays a character who goes to heaven, but there's been a mistake, and she's not a very nice person on Earth, and she's trying to continue staying in heaven because heaven's pretty great. And it's created by Mike Schur, who did Parks and Recreation for NBC. Ted Danson is in it as well. But there's just a sense of world building, a cleverness, a smarts about that show that I really like.
Eric, just quickly, what would you name?
There's a show called Pitch on Fox. It's really good, about the first woman to compete in Major League Baseball. There's a show called This Is Us that's kind of like a family drama with a twist. It's very well done, I think. And I'm surprised by Designated Survivor, this drama that features Kiefer Sutherland as an unassuming guy who becomes president when almost every other person in government is killed.
Eric, Ingu, Jen, thank you so much for joining us. I'd add, This Is Us is a show I've really liked this year, although it's not as good as The Americans, which has got to be my favorite show on television. I want to thank you all for being with us this hour. I'm Susan Page of USA Today, sitting in for Diane Rehm. Thanks for listening.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Baker, Denise Couture, Rebecca Kaufman, Lisa Dunn, Alexandra Boti, Danielle Knight, Erica R. Hendry, and Allison Brody. The engineer is Alex Drewenskis.